Three stories about electricity. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If you use computers, and especially if you use old computers, electricity becomes a little bit more than just finding a plug. In three different cases in my life, I dealt with electricity in strange ways, and I thought I'd share them all today. The first time was when I was working at MIT as a temp. I was working in the physical sciences lab under a couple of professors, and my job was basically to answer the phone, take dictation, transfer a few things to the tech writing language, and otherwise be a secretary. But one day, one of the graduate students came up and asked me for help because they were going to clear out an old room and make it into graduate student offices. My professor, who was in charge of this room, told me and this other graduate student, just get rid of what's there, call up the trash people, and we'll get it out of there and get the desks in there. To my surprise, when I went down there with the student, it was actually a fully functioning vax laboratory. I mean, it was a complete vax setup. I don't mean a few machines shoved in the corner with manuals piled on top of them. I meant that it was completely set up for a vax to be functioning, and it was as if somebody turned a switch off a few years before and then never went back to it. The machinery basically looked pristine. The days of dedicated machine rooms being inside of an office are disappearing, and we're moving more to these centralized data centers where everything's kind of homogeneous and huge and human beings don't really go there. But this was a throwback, even then, to there being a sealed, controlled machine room visited by a precious few and representing all of the computing power of a department. The grad student and I looked at each other. And I said, you know what? I think I can get some people for this. So I called my buddies at the loft. There's a new book out about the cult of the dead cow, and I'm prominent in the first few chapters talking about the early history of the CDC and what became the loft. Spelled L0PHT, if you've not heard of them before, it was a coalition of hackers that had built a shared office space in South Boston to be able to keep all of their toys in one place. I made a call out to them and said, you know, they're going to make people pay to get rid of this stuff, but I'll bet if you got a truck, you could take all of this immediately. And you know, they absolutely did. A day or two later, all the members of the loft who could get over there were unplugging machines, rolling them on a ramp, and pushing them out the door. This was probably hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of digital machines just leaving because we needed to make space for desks. As they loaded things out, I was talking with different people about what these machines did and how the whole room functioned and what a wonder it was to have this gift fall into their laps. But these things ran off of 220 volt electricity, which not many people have access to. One of the lesser known members of the loft was Stefan. Stefan was involved with the loft's early days, and he was also a licensed electrician. As we started to get to the last of the machines, Stefan asked me, what was this room going to become? And I told him, dead office space. And he said to me, do you think they would object if we took the power with us? At that time, that sounded like a magic spell to me. The idea that you could take the electrical system of a room away and not die. And I told him so. You know, it turned out Stefan knew exactly what to do. How to unscrew the junction box and circuitry and everything that was needed to bring 220 volt to where these machines were going. And towards the end of this loadout, all of the electrical system went with the machines into the truck. This machine, the VAX, was moved into loft headquarters and was turned on every once in a while for special occasions, mostly because it would spike their bill whenever they had it on. But if you're at all aware of loft lore, there was a mannequin that lived on this machine while it was there, and it became known as the Lady of the Vax. And that Vax lived on for years, slowly having spare parts taken off of it and sold at various flea markets, and I'm sure it was traded and ended up in a dozen different rooms over the decades. But I like to think that handing an entire Vax for free to one of the more notorious hacking groups was perhaps a better way of disposing it to make the room for those 12 or so graduate student desks that replaced it. MIT has something called a free cycle list, where people tell other folks that there's machinery leaving their office, and if anybody wants it, it'll be hanging out outside the door within the next 10 or 15 minutes. In this way, machines go from owner to owner, and hardware isn't just thrown out, but is given a new life for a while until eventually it ends up in a museum or the trash. This was how I had a couple leases and an SGI box that somebody had thrown out along with a perfectly functioning monitor. And it was also how I got my hands on a couple MFM drives. This is around 1994, and I'm working towards setting up what would become my failed ISP. My idea was to set up cheap hardware and then charge a nominal fee to use it, and I guess profit, probably at least break even. It didn't quite work out that way. That's when I got my hands on a couple machines that truly stretched the bounds of how bad an idea I could have. They were Sun 3/280 workstations, basically large 3x3 metal cubes that weighed about 200 pounds apiece, each with their own set of Motorola processors inside and running a version of Sun OS that was already out of date by the time I was getting my hands on this. Completely out of date. They didn't come with any storage internally. They had a bunch of cards inside them, each one the size of a placemat that you clicked in, and some of them would have a megabyte of memory, while other ones would drive a serial connection, a network port, or maybe some sort of hard drive. I got a deal through a buddy. He told me there was somebody who was getting rid of a pair of MFM drives, and if he knew that it was going to a good home, he would drive them to me up in Boston and drop them off with me. I said my ISP would be an excellent home, and one weekend a car drove up. He had warned me they were a little big, but when he finally got to the parking lot and gave them to me, I didn't quite realize until that moment how big he meant. It was two MFM drives. If you've not heard of MFM before, think SCSI connection or USB connection, except ludicrous. One whole set of cables for sending the signal about where the drive head is at any moment, and another set of cables just to send power. The drives themselves, each weighed 150 pounds, and the total capacity, each of them, was 250 megabytes. Utilizing back strength that I no longer have, I got these up into my rent control department along with the server to drive it, and I started experimenting with making it work. So I had this 3x3 metal cube connected to two very large drives. Each of these 250 megabyte MFM drives was about the size of a footlocker. So imagine a kid's toy box completely filled with lead, and you start to get an idea. Within about 45 seconds, I blew the circuit. As it was a rent-controlled apartment, the entire structure of the building and how it was put together and how it was maintained was a masterclass in jankiness. You have to understand that it's very rare now to find a circuit inside of your apartment that's anything less than 20 amps, but in my old building, that was how many amps were given to each floor. I found this out by experimentation. Going down into the basement, reading that it was only 20 amps per circuit and that each circuit was a floor, I reset the floor's power and went up and looked at the total amperage of these drives and machines. It turns out that my machine, plus its two hard drives, itself was eating well over 15 amps. Let's pull this back a little bit. I am talking about a total of 500 megabytes of storage taking 15 amps, and compare that to today, where a 1 gigabyte USB stick that uses basically no energy can be had for a few dollars or probably wrapped into a gift bag at a conference. Now, the smart thing to do here would have been to find some office space, arrange for proper power, and then test my hardware. But I was not smart. What I did instead was buy a few extension cords and buy an adapter that would screw into a light bulb socket and add a plug to it, and then attach it to the hallway lights through all three floors. You know, whenever I've seen a cyberpunk movie or an anime portray some sort of futuristic yet backwards-looking hardware and technology, I don't really have to be wowed by that because I lived it. I took three different extension cords, connected them to the two drives and the server, and then strung them out underneath the front door of my apartment, and then taped them to the floor, running them up the wall into the light socket of my hallway, and then stringing the other down the staircase and attaching it to the light sockets of the second and first floor. I plugged them all in. They definitely dimmed, but it all worked. Now we have two other problems. First of all three machines were obviously designed for a place where there was soundproofing, because each one sounded like a jet engine running a hairdryer over a screaming banshee. Second, this was an incredible fire hazard. Besides running these things in my apartment, which was a one-room apartment, I was also stringing up wires throughout the hallways and then absorbing powers out of the light sockets. And maybe it's now that I mentioned I had to get an adapter to remove the grounding wire? This is the kind of stuff you come up with when technology as a toy and as a place for exploration is much more interesting to you than self-preservation. My safety last data center running in my rent-controlled apartment lived for a glorious 6 hours. At some point, I ended up turning it off so I could go to sleep, and when I woke up the next morning, I noticed that none of my machines would turn on. I went out my door and coiled up onto my doorknob were all of the wires I had done, along with the adapters, and a little note saying, "Don't ever, ever do this again." And you know, I didn't. I made some arrangements with some artists. I moved my ISP to a building that at least theoretically could handle real electricity. And I learned a lesson, which perhaps I've unlearned a couple times, about knowing when to say when something is so amazing and so interesting, you just want to see what happens when you turn it on. Finally, one last story about electricity and also how money talks. At one of the DEF CONs I attended, an idea came across my mail from Jeff Moss, the organizer of DEF CON, that it would be neat if there was some way to set up a vintage computer lab at the conference while it was going on, and did I know any people, or was there anything I could do to get some old machines there? And I had previously seen the work of a California-based enthusiast that frankly had blown me away. His name was Pavel, and what Pavel had done was bring up entire old mainframes and mini computers in rooms in a contemporary space and make them run for people to experience them firsthand. This required him loading up a truck, dragging it to a conference area, and then booting it over and over for people. So I told him, I've got just the guy for you. The arrangements took a few weeks of back and forth, but Pavel agreed to load a tractor trailer up with a number of mini computers and mainframes and drive them from California to Las Vegas for DEF CON. And I'll get to the electricity in a moment, but I want to really make clear something that I think a lot of people kind of gleam over when they think about conferences of a certain size. If your conference is something like 10 or 20 or 30 people, there's a lot you don't have to worry about. You have to worry about getting clearances for different things and maybe having food on premises or finding parking. But once you get up to thousands of people, once you're on the scale of a Las Vegas convention center, there are considerations that are hitting you from every side constantly. You can't assume anything. You can't assume there'll be a loading dock. You can't be assumed you'll be allowed to move things down through the hallways. You'll find out about the fire marshal who can shut everything down if they don't like the way things look. There are all of these roadblocks and obstacles. The only way to really get through a lot of them is just to have an open and flexible checkbook. Luckily, Jeff had that. Pavel showed up after an overnight drive, and we discovered which loading dock was best to get things into the room. And after we were doing this and loading all of these machines in overnight, it quickly became obvious there wasn't any power for these mainframes. There were lots of plugs that had been put in, but they were all 120-volt household current being made available for laptops and little desktop computers, but we were bringing in the big old iron. You'd think that would be a showstopper, but when Jeff came by and we told him what our problem was, and he said, "I'll get on it." Very roughly, and rounding it a bit, it turns out that the cost for having a few extra 220-volt power drops put into a conference center on very short notice is about $10,000. I don't know how much of that is a deposit. I don't know how much of that ever came back. But I do know that was the check that was written in very short time in order to get these mainframes up and running that day. Luckily, the resulting display, this computer lab in the middle of a conference center, was a huge hit. Hundreds of people came through that room and watched as Pavel would reinstall the operating system over and over while wearing a white lab coat. He would excitedly tell people what was going on. He would take an actual tape and he would connect it to an old IBM or digital mainframe, boot that thing up in front of your eyes, and then show people how it was. Some folks had known about this all their lives. In fact, some people said this was their job when they were younger, to get these machines up and running and repair them, and said how heartwarming it was to meet these old friends one last time. But there was one other little event, unrelated to the power, that truly inspired me. DEF CON is full of kids and adults, people from all different walks of technical life. You get teenagers who are there for their first time, and you get old-timers who predate DEF CON by many years who come in and enjoy and drink up the energy. And there was this one kid, and I'm saying kid when I say 19 years old, who found out that the older mainframes had front panel switches where you could, by hand, click in bootloader code or even full programs by flipping switches up and down. Think of it as even worse than assembly language. He found out about it on Thursday, got his hands on documentation about how the front panel switches worked, and on and off throughout the 4 days of the conference, this young man taught himself the language, devised and clicked in a program to make the front panel switches and lights do things, and then ran it multiple times through the weekend. He went from not even knowing something existed to banging his head against it day after day until 4 days later he could get a program up and running and then walk away from it knowing he'd probably never get the opportunity again. There's something weird and inspiring and strange that happened. A little conference love affair between a young person and a very old machine. A true vintage December and May romance. That is electricity. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.